Welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. David's no officer, and I'm certainly no gentleman. And folks, you've got nowhere else to go.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning into this, the very 10th episode of Kayak Mainline. Ooh. As always, nice. We got a little extra energy there from David Johnston, my famous co-host.
Welcome. How are you?
I am good. My name is Kelly Blades, if you haven't already figured that out. And we are what embodies Kayak Mainline. And this is 10 episodes. David, can you believe the 10 episodes?
I never thought we'd get this far.
I kind of did. You know, after the last one, I thought, yeah, why not?
I know, I have lots of friends who have just lost their bets.
Well, good for them. You should never bet against an American and a Canadian working together with synergy. Yeah,
this is an international cooperation, like a mini UN version.
Yes, and today we have a couple of interviews from famous people, and so we're adding another country in called Wisconsin. Mm. Yes. See, it's not a country. I don't know if you know that. It's not. It's just a state in the Union.
Yeah,
it's not just a state. It's the cheese, the dairy state. Interesting factoid about Wisconsin. It originally was the diary state.
What?
Because they kept meticulous records of everything. I'm making that up. How could you believe that? For one
second? What tourist board? What
is the that? Diary state? It just didn't read well on the billboards. The diary state. Come to Wisconsin. We'll document everything.
Yeah.
Never worked out.
Great.
So
marketing 101.
They failed miserably. So I think actually Wisconsin people, Wisconsinites, Wisconsiners,
yeah,
Wisconsinians are some of the only people who say sorry as much as Toronans, Ontarians.
Well, more Canadians, because as a Toronto person, I'm the rudest of all Canadians.
Are you really? Yeah. I thought that was folks from Montreal.
Well, you know, Toronto is the center of Canada.
The epicenter.
And depending on where you live in Canada, it's also the armpit of Canada. So, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and that's mainly if you live in Toronto, you're the center. And if you're out of Toronto, it's the armpit.
Well, for the first time in my life, I'm going to take the moral high road on this and say I love all of the Canadians I've ever met.
That's a nice change.
Aside from that one guy. Yeah, that one guy. But you know who
he's a jerk.
About. That's right.
So what have you been up to?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because I just got back from the Golden Gate Sea Kayak Symposium.
Don't tell me anything. I don't want to hear anything about it.
Okay, it's going to make for a boring podcast.
You're killing me. Okay, tell me, spill.
Okay, so I've been there before, and it's absolutely beautiful. It is one of the nicest symposia that I have been to. You know, for a multitude of reasons. One of the first reasons is it's on the Pacific.
Okay,
you know, so I don't get out that way all that often. So it's just great to be in the Pacific, and it is at a spot where they have tremendous conditions. So I think Sunday when we were out there, I was teaching an incident management class with Steve Shearer, and we went, you know, past the Golden Gate Bridge, and it was coming in at 10 to 12 feet.
Really?
And that wasn't even the big, big stuff. So around the corner at Rodeo, I guess it was coming in bigger, but I'm not sure. I wasn't out there. But yeah, 10 to 12 feet, and it was like just coming in beautifully. Like it comes in at like, you know, over six knots through the gate sometimes in when it's moving out of San Francisco Bay, it is just moving. But we had like I think four one or four seven.
Well, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was just great conditions all the way around. But the downside is that you know, the first day, the Friday, the conditions were perfect, so it was peaking right at the right time for tides, so people could, you know, get a little practice in and then go out and have some big stuff and then have some time to play.
Right.
But on Sunday, it was really peaking about 3 o'clock, which is when we were shutting down the symposium.
Oh.
So it was right at the end of class where we had had really, really big stuff. So, you know, and fast stuff. And folks listening, that's not even big for out there. But it was really good training conditions.
Yeah, because you don't want 40-footers because, you know, who can hear and do anything? Everyone's just too scared.
Oh, I would be. I would be sitting curled up in the fetal position, weeping to myself. That's not true. But I might go, that's a little big for me. Mm. And by little, I mean a lot.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it was really cool. And I got to hang out with some fantastic, just utterly fantastic people. Sean Morley brings in some of the best coaches from everywhere to teach. So, you know, you got Sean and Leon, who are, you know, American staples. You've got the old man in the sea, John Carmody from the East Coast, from Maine, who pretty much knows every inch of the ocean. He's just a wealth of knowledge. Steve Maynard from New York came out. He's, you know, an expat from the UK and a coach level five from the BCU. He knows everything. Helen Wilson, who is a local out there, Matt Nelson, and Paul Cuthie. You know, the list goes on and on and on. And but I will tell you, all these guys I've met before. I actually met Jen Kleck for the first time, and she was a lot of fun to hang out with. She's got a symposium coming up in Baja, which is really, really cool. I got an email from her, so I'm thinking I'm going to try to weasel my way into the 2014 version of her symposium in Baja. I think that'd be cool.
That would be cool.
But, you know, the crowning moment, I have to say, was meeting the Hurricane Riders.
Nice.
So, yeah, I don't know if a lot of Americans know who those are, but I know the Canadians do. And they are like, you know, some just fantastic paddlers, young paddlers, sea kayakers who go out in really big stuff, and they seal launch off everything.
Yeah, they're pretty crazy.
And yeah, and so you look at their videos, and you got to think, man, these guys are jackasses. They're probably young and narcissistic and jerks. But I will tell you, I had such a great time with these young people.
Well, they are Canadian.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, they're still, they have the tattoos and they have that whitewater boater mentality.
Right.
But still in all, man, they were just good, fun guys to hang out with, you know, all of them, and including the girl, Kate. So, yeah, just a great time with those guys.
Yeah.
Had absolute ball with just everything out there. So it's beautiful. You're right there at the Golden Gate Bridge, Marin Headlands. The one downside.
Yeah.
Here's a cautionary tale, kids.
I need something to hold on to. That's not
yes.
great. Okay.
Well, this is great, but it killed me. So Ben, I've been running lately, and Ben Lowry was kind enough to say, well, let's go for a little jog. He was going to take it really easy on me. Mm. So it was a 4-mile run, he told me, in from where we were staying into the symposium site, but it's over a mountain. Now, for them, a mountain is, it's not even close to a mountain in California. Okay. But for me, a flatlander, oh, it was mountainy.
You're used to something like a rise.
Yeah, not like 12 feet.
Right.
Okay. You know, over a mile and a half. That's where I'm at. So, but I mean, he was really cool. And you know, he waited up for my big butt to keep up. But the coolest thing is, so we started off early in the morning so that we could get the run in and still be on time. And we went up this hill. And once we got over, the sun was rising, and we just crested over this hill, and you could see the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. It was literally breathtaking.
That's cool.
It was fantastic.
That's not bad.
No, but the problem is it beat me up pretty well, but I decided to do it Saturday as well, and that about killed me.
Well, there's your problem. First thing, you're getting exercise. That's your first problem.
That's right. I was walking around like Fred Sanford the rest of the weekend, to the point where on Sunday, we were running this incident management class, and we're trying to get to the surf beach on the other side of the gate, and so there's our beach, right? And I'm letting all the students do their work, and Steve was with them, so I thought, right, I'm gonna assess this. They're starting to come in to shore, so I'm gonna assess this from the beach. So I go surfing in, and it's real small. It's like, you know, 2-3 foot waves,
right?
Beautiful surf waves, and I surf in like a freaking champ. I'm all excited. And I get to the beach and I pop my skirt and I realize I can't move my legs.
Nice.
So I roll over like a dead seal out of my kayak and kind of scramble up.
Was there an audience?
Oh, everyone was watching me. Excellent. Of course.
Of course.
So, yeah, I mean, they all knew that I ran, so they weren't saying, wow, Kelly sucks.
Well, knowing you would have just, you know, poured that on. This would have been way better, but I ran.
So. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. I totally made it look like it was, you know, not my fault in the least.
Right.
But I mean, it was a great, great time. So again, I will tell you, they're planning the 2014 version right now. Sign up early and often, because you will not find better coaches anywhere. You'll not find better conditions. It's just great.
That's great. We should interview the Hurricane Riders sometime.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I not only did I set up that, so we can talk to the Hurricane Riders, but also sort of their sponsor and patron is Sterling from Sterling Kayaks.
Yeah.
And you and I discussed, I talked to him, and he's a fantastic dude as well. So in upcoming episodes, we're going to have a little interview. He's almost ready to get his shop back up and running, and he's really free with telling us how that whole fire started. It, for those of you who don't know, there's a fire in Sterling Kayaks, basically burned to the ground. So he's real keen to do an interview with us and talk to us about it, and just a genuinely nice guy. So
that's cool.
Real excited for him.
Well, that sounds like a terrible event. Not the fire. I'm talking about the actual symposium. Sounds just
right. It was
terrible.
Horrible. And Sean and Matt do a terrible, terrible. Oh, you know what? And the worst part about it, one of their friends is a chef. And she came in and did breakfast, lunch, and dinner for
what
us.
A jerk.
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, the food was good and healthy. And yeah.
It's the worst
and, okay. All right. I'm gonna put the last nail in the coffin. So where we're eating and where the symposium is, there's a bar just up top. So we're at the lower level, bars up top.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So you walk upstairs, you buy your beer from the bar, you come down, you eat fantastic food, you hang out with great people. Horrible.
Well,
and all the time you're looking out, and of course the Golden Gate Bridge is right there lit up like a Christmas tree.
I'm glad I was able to spend that weekend at home working on a computer.
Right, exactly. Listening to your kids cry. Yeah.
I'm kind of glad I forgot that you were actually at that event until you just mentioned it, because I would have been even worse, more ornery. Kids, get out of the room.
For those of you who want to send hate emails, that's kayakmainline at gmail.com. And,
That's awesome.
So, but you know what we have right now? We want to talk about a different event that's coming up very soon, and that is a fantastic interview with Darren Bush from Canoocopia. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very, very exciting interview here with my good friend, and really my children's sort of surrogate uncle, Darren Bush from Rutabaga. Darren, how are you today?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. And you're doing a little something in March, from what I understand.
Yeah, I'm going to buy some dog food.
Good.
Get that divided up between two containers.
Good, good.
I've got some freezers to clean out.
Good.
Probably
excellent.
Pick the dog poop out of my shoes that have been sitting in the garage all winter. But other than that, I don't have much going on.
Quite a forward planner.
He is. And well, you know what? I figured I would come out and visit you, Darren, because I'm going to be going to the one and only, the stellar, the maybe universe's largest kayak and canoe expo, Canoocopia. Do you have?
No.
Yeah. You ever heard of it?
Known universe.
Yes. Some of the unknown universe.
I have heard of it. Yes. It's the other thing I'm doing in March besides taking dog poop out of my hiking boots.
You know, the funny thing is, you know, you're being facetious. I actually know that you are going to be doing all of those things that you just talked about.
You're absolutely right.
I've been to your house, so I know how this goes. So
you got a pair of boots like that too, eh?
I do. You got the little cottage in the back. I've walked through your backyard. I know what happens.
It's kind of a minefield right now.
See, this is what we bring to you on Kayak Mainline. We talk about Darren Bush's dogs, and the really hard hitting stuff. I think.
Yeah, those dogs can lay cable, I'm telling you. They're
lay cable. That is a first. That's a new one for all of us, I think. But you are doing Canoocopia. So Rutabaga is, how long has Rutabaga been in business?
Rutabaga Paddle Sports has been, as an entity,
yes,
in business since 2002.
Okay.
But before that was when I purchased the business from the former owner,
right,
who started it in 1976.
So it's been around a few days, is what
yes.
I'm saying. And yeah. You guys put together Canoocopia, and that's been going on. What year are we on now for Canoocopia?
No one really knows.
Okay,
you
know, really?
It's one of those things that it's like, when was our first date, honey?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Exactly.
Sometime, you know, before we got married, probably.
Well, it was Socrates was one of your very first speakers.
It kind of started off as a meet the folks who build the boats thing at in front of the old shop over in the old grocery store on Park Street back 25, 30 years ago.
Right on.
And what happened is I started working for full-time at that business in the mid-90s. At the same time, the old Dane County Forum, which was the fairgrounds, got razed to the ground, thankfully, because it was a, you know, what any fairgrounds built in the 60s should be, you know, an asbestos-laden fire trap. No, but they tore it down and they built this beautiful thing called the Alliant Energy Center. Mm-hmm. And there's an exposition hall and they, you know, basically pimped it out. And it went from being 25,000 square feet of basically a barn to 100,000 square feet. And we figured we'll take half of it. We'll take 50 and see if we can fill it up.
Sure.
And the guy that owned the business before me wasn't much for details. So I got out a piece of graph paper and instead of like, oh, just set up over there somewhere, I actually made a grid.
Oh, dear. You had the graph paper out. Yeah, I see.
And I said, here's the deal. This is how we're going to do it. He's like, oh, you just do it. I'm like, great. So I kind of took it over and turned it into something that was a little bit more organized and basically wanted to make it so I had a better experience for the consumer and more fun for us, frankly. And
sure.
Selfish as well. So, and then we started getting into bigger, and then the next year we added 20, and the next year we took the whole thing, and then finally we just said, we're taking the whole hall, if that's all right with you. And they said, if the check clears, that's just fine. So we took the whole hall, and I started using a desktop publishing software, of all things, to do the floor plan, because it was easier to move things around and keep on erasing and using whiteout. So that's how we do the floor plan, is using like Cork.
Wow.
You know, we had a few speakers coming into the old hall behind a piece of drapery, basically. And,
the know, great and powerful Oz sort of thing.
right. Yes. Step forward, Tin Man. It was just a big curtain with some chairs behind it and a slide presentation. If anything happened in the hall that was loud, you know, totally disruptive. Well, the good news is with the building of the Alliant Energy Center is they built in like real life speaker rooms with sound systems and lights that could be controlled and all that. And so we took them and we made four speaker rooms and found that they were pretty full, but not all the time. So we started dividing them up and pretty soon we had six and then we added two upstairs and that was eight. And then we added two over across the street at the hotel and combined ones. We just basically been playing chess with this thing for, you know, 15 years.
Sure. My favorite is the Algonquin room. I love working the Algonquin room.
Yeah, you and Dorothy Parker.
It's true. that's just for you kids out there who can follow along in your handles. You did, as a matter of fact. And there's nothing wrong. You shouldn't be ashamed. So how many vendors do you have? So to give you a backdrop, Darren's kind of spoken a little bit about the layout of it, but you're really talking about a real live kind of almost sports arena style play. This is an expo center. This is the real deal. And over the years, you brought in more and more vendors. So it's a rutabaga event, but it's a, like Darren said, it's a way for the consumers to come in and meet the people who are building. Well, at the time it was kayaks and canoes, and now it's kayaks, canoes, paddles, PFDs, all sorts of other things. So you can go from booth to booth, and there are people, if I'm not mistaken, who will come for 3 days and spend half of their time listening to some of the best speakers in North America and beyond. Like you've had Justin Krzyzewski there. So I mean, people come in and listen to. Thank you. they come in to listen to speakers, and then they come and meet us, let's say, at P&H and Warner and things like that. So how many vendors do you have? Is that a pretty accurate description?
Yeah, it is. So I don't see, vendors is kind of a weird term.
Sure.
Vendors is what retailers call manufacturers.
Right, because we're really partners in all this.
Well, exactly. But I'm looking at it in terms of everybody. There's 275, let's call them exhibitors.
Okay.
Okay, and that's everything from people who make stuff like you guys to outfitters and guides, schools, nonprofits, anybody that has anything to do with paddling, I let them in.
Right.
So it's basically people who belong to, I mean, I could say belong to the club, but.
So how many people come through the door?
About 20,000.
20,000.
Yeah.
And they're all going to come to listen to you speak, David.
Yeah. I'm already printing out my posters already.
I thought that was John Davidson, not David Johnson.
Yeah, I talked to the printer. I've got headshots all ready to go. And yes. Big Sharpie markers for an impromptu autograph session.
There you go. And you can actually get a caricature guy to draw your picture and the person who's getting the autograph together.
Yeah, I was playing tennis or something.
Or driving a tiny little car.
So why is it the Canadians are so modest?
I'm sorry. I feel terrible about it.
He said sorry. Okay, we got him.
It doesn't take much. Have you listened to the podcast? He says it like every five words. It's terrible. Yeah, so take more shots at the Canadians. I like that, Darren.
Look, half of Ontario is staying at my house.
It's true. Is David staying at your house?
Well, no, I bailed out.
You bailed out?
Yeah.
Did you bail out?
No, I'm staying with other Canadians.
Okay.
Oh. Well, you're still invited for breakfast.
I'm pretty excited about it.
So Sunday morning. So Kinikopia is well, I'll back up a little. A friend of mine once told me he was trying to describe Kinikopia, and it's kind of weird because you can't really describe it. Yeah, there's a sail, and there's speakers and stuff. But he said, you know, if the Voyagers were suddenly transported 400 years into the future and they saw Kinikopia, they'd go, oh, it's a rendezvous.
Yeah.
And that kind of describes it because there's commerce that goes on and there's, you know, stuff. But basically, it's a big party where everybody can get out early in the spring and go, hey, paddling season's here. Whether it is or not, we're going to pretend like it is and get together and have a big party. So that spirit of it carries over into all the other activities. And, you know, my family, you know, the industry is, you know, my life, really. The sure. people that, you know, my best friends in the world I made because of my job. And we have a big house and our kids are pretty much gone now. And so when Kinikopia comes, we've started inviting people to stay with us. Usually they were small manufacturers that, you know, were using their last gas card to get here so they can show us the new cool stuff that they have. And it's like, well, you can't afford a hotel, just stay with us. And that's how Jody Lalonde from Turtle Paddles became a really good friend. He was too broke. He was going to sleep in his truck. I said, stay at my place. So now there's about 10 people that stay here, you know, couches, floors, spare rooms, the shack behind the house, which Kelly spoke so eloquently of.
I love the shack behind the house. There's a huge cadre of Canadians staying at your house. Is Kevin Callum staying there?
Of course, Kevin's staying with me.
He's always there with his high-pitched voice. Does he do that early in the morning? Yep, he just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. It's great. I see him constantly, and I still don't think he knows who the hell I am, which is great. Yeah. Because it's always like meeting a new friend, you know, like, oh, I've never met you before, but I think you're an American. I'm sorry, I'm out in Kevin right now. He probably, oh, I know you now.
I wake up at 2 a.m. and gone in there when he and Jody were, and it's like, gentlemen, it's time for you to go to sleep.
Oh, they just be giggling together.
It was like a slumber party. I wanted to go and slap them. You know,
it's true.
Playing truth or dare or whatever.
Okay. Exactly. So no, it's a good time there, and it's a good time at the show. So when do you start the show? As if I didn't know already. What time do the doors open?
Doors open at 4 o'clock on Friday, the 8th of March, and stay open till 9 that night. And that's kind of the machine wheezing into action.
Yeah, it is a fantastic time. Folks, if you have a chance to come out to Madison, Wisconsin and check out Kinikopia, it is one of those must-do things on your paddling list. Everybody talks about – everybody in the paddle sports world knows about Kinikopia. And if you haven't come to see it, by gosh, you should, because it's a rare experience. It's sort of like the paddle sports meets, like Darren said, the carnival atmosphere meets a rendezvous, meets sort of a family reunion, meets your 25-year reunion. It's just crazy.
With just a pinch of Burning Man.
With just a pinch of Burning Man. Just
a pinch of Burning Man.
Yep. You know, and it's one of the only indoor shows that I've ever worked at. So a few years ago, Danny Mongo and I used to do shows there, or we were doing a show there, the Death and Mayhem show. And I had like, I don't know, a half hour block between doing a rescue clinic in the pool, because there is a pool attached, so you can actually see on water stuff, which is kind of sweet. So we did our show, and I had a half an hour, but I needed to go get some gear from NRS. And it's the only indoor show I've ever been able to walk out with a towel wrapped around my head and a towel wrapped around my waist and walk through 20,000 people, and nobody batted an eye. It was
that's because the towel stayed on.
It did, yes. It would have been a different story.
Yeah, that would have, yeah.
But
yeah.
It would have been more like Burning Man if it came off.
It's really true. Yep.
But, you know, I memorized this number just for you, so I have to use it. So okay. There are 97 presenters this year.
Very cool.
And they're giving about 160 different topics. So if you do the math, that's about 1.6 topics per presenter.
Yeah, that's too many. I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is, you know, Nancy's in charge of, you know, making sure the speakers all work really well. And every year it's like, okay, we're gonna cap it at 80, right? We're gonna cap it at 80. And she's like, yeah, we'll cap it at 80. And then it's like, you know, this guy called, he's got this really cool presentation about, you know, circumnavigating, you know, Antarctica backwards. And it's like, you know, how could you say no to a guy who says, I want to do a presentation on circumnavigating Antarctica backwards?
Exactly.
You have to do it. And so we let people in and you let people in. And it's like, okay, we need to find another room for them to speak in.
Sure.
So next year, I promise, we're going to cap it at 80.
Okay. Cap it at 80. I'm going to hold you to that in September.
It's not going to happen.
No, it really won't. Exactly.
There's no way.
I know how that goes. But yeah, you're a girl who can't say no when it comes to that, though. But I will tell you, having been there for so often, I applaud you and Nancy Salisbury. I'm going to use her last name. I'm not afraid. She works really hard to get all the presenters together. And Scott Hamster and Jim Pippin and Sasha, all of your people who work for Rutabaga bust their ass to get this done.
Can you say ass on a podcast?
I can see that's the beauty of a podcast. I can say whatever I want.
Yeah.
Now it's up to David to edit out. So.
I will tell you that what you just said is you know more true than anybody can realize. This is beyond a team effort.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do much of the heavy lifting. I really don't. My job is to sort of conduct the orchestra. But frankly, you know, if it weren't for Sasha, this wouldn't run. If it weren't for Scott, this wouldn't run. If it weren't for Nancy, there wouldn't be speakers. All these things that happen, and everybody says, oh, wow, it looks so organized. It's like, well, it is because these people take their jobs very seriously.
So, David, do you have any questions for Darren? I've been monopolizing everything here.
Where can I go to get more info?
Funny you should ask that. Canucopia.com, a website we built especially to convey all the information needed to enjoy Canucopia at its fullest.
Well, I'm pretty excited to come, tell you that.
No,
I've been wanting to come for about 4 or 5 years. Finally, I was able to convince my lady friend to send me.
I think you'll find it to be remarkably enjoyable.
I believe it.
It's funny because, you know, we have... Like I said, we have that, you know, there's always one jerk every year just so we can have one. But
right. And if you look around and don't see him, it's you.
It's weird. That many people in one spot. And it's like if we could take the Middle East and pack them into Canucopia, all their problems be solved. People there are so nice. Right. Yeah. And part of that's, you know, Midwestern nice, you know, but part of it is just it really is kind of a big love fest because everybody there loves the outdoors. They love paddling. They love, you know, being on the water. So if you're in the same room as those people, there's a good idea that you have something in common with them, you know, and that does bring people together in a pretty amazing way.
Well, I think that is probably the best way to end this interview right there. That was some beautiful words from Darren Bush of Rutabaga and Canucopia. David, you got anything more for Darren?
No, I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, Darren, for me and David, I think that's the proper English. I'm not sure. We will be seeing you in just a few weeks in Madison, Wisconsin at Canucopia. And those dates again are?
March 8th, March 9th, and Kelly?
March 10th.
Yes.
I win. I finally win.
I totally fed that to you.
I'm a winner.
Locked up.
No, I didn't lock. I was waiting. I was there for you. So, yeah. Well, great to have you on the show, Darren. And please tell your lovely wife, Stephanie, that we said hello.
Hey, Steph. Kelly and David, say hello.
Are you calling me?
No, they just said hi.
Hi.
You hear that?
Hi, Stephanie. Lisa's looking forward to seeing you at Door County, which is going to be our next interview with Darren Bush.
Oh,
Thanks for joining us here on Kayak Mainline, Darren.
thanks for having me.
Thanks for being had. So that was Darren Bush from Rutabaga and talking about Canucopia, which is going to happen March 8th, 9th, and 10th, if you did not get that information from the interview. And if you need to know where you're going, go to canucopia.com on the interweb, and you can find out all the information, including information on where David Johnston mm-hmm. will be speaking.
I will be speaking Friday night in some room somewhere.
So, the Algonquin room, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I think – I don't know which one. And then I'm teaching – or sorry, I'm speaking again Sunday, I think one-ish. So that's yeah, cool. So you want to do it. But I'm what am I talking? I'm talking – I have two topics. I'm doing one on why you need to come paddling in Georgian Bay.
I agree already.
Yeah, yeah. That's. I'm just going to put a big picture of rocks. And then
– And Tim.
Yeah.
Tim Dye yeah. singing Stan Rogers tunes, and that's it right
there. Yeah, and I'll just say any questions. And then – what's the second one I'm doing on search and rescue? So what happens when it all falls apart and you need help? What happens behind the scenes?
That's cool.
Yeah. So that'll be nerdy. The first one will be inspirational.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Good. Yeah. Great. So we got some news.
It's time for the Kayak Mainline News. Yes, your source for news all over the world, down the street or just outside your door.
We have news. Yep. Do we have any animal news?
We do.
So, awesome.
Come with me. We're going to go to South Africa. Bridget and Neil, they're walking with their puppies some Sunday morning in St. Lucia, South Africa. They're walking along the beach, throwing stones, and they found something on the beach.
No.
Take a guess at what it is.
It is... a 17th century slaving ship.
Just washed up.
Just washed up. No, that's not it.
Okay.
It is ambergris.
No.
No?
Oh, I should have picked that story that someone found it in the UK just this week. They're offered like $14,000 for this lump of goo.
See?
Take one last guess.
One last guess. It was a ceiling fan from... one of the New Jersey casinos that were blown apart by the hurricane.
How did you
know? I think I'm wrong. I'm wrong on all of those counts.
So they're walking along the beach, and what do they find? They find a head of a crocodile.
Dun, dun, dun. Now, as far as I know, there's not a lot of crocodiles in the ocean.
Well, there's these saltwater ones.
Well, sure.
Yeah. But, well, okay, so they find this head, and they're staring at it.
Where's the body?
Well, that's part of the whole thing. It's kind of so they found this decapitated head while walking the dogs.
Okay.
And the head part itself is like 2.5 feet long. So it would have been this monster crocodile.
I'm doing that thing with my hands now, trying to figure out what, like, I know what 2.5 feet long looks like if I hold my hands apart.
Right.
Okay. So that's a crocodile.
And they figure it was bit off by a great white shark.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Oh, story. So see, that's so good. Hold on for a second. That's so good because you're a crocodile, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, you're floating around going, dude, I am pre-a-freaking-storic.
Yeah.
All right. I am a killing machine. Watch me how badass I can be. A great white shark.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the great white shark is like, what are you? Well, you're nothing. I'm prehistoric and I'm giant.
I believe there was a whole movie based on a supersized shark fighting a supersized crocodile. And
I see that movie so bad right now, I can taste it.
So it was chopped up, and there was a bit of some confusion because they thought, as if this is going to happen. But they're in an area where there is lots of great whites, and there are crocodiles in there. But they don't think it was poachers, because that's what somebody said. This would just be poachers, because it was kind of a clean cut. But when the person pointed out that, well, no poacher would leave the head behind because that's the most valuable part of the whole thing.
Right.
Right. So,
well, I say right like I know what the valuable part of a crocodile is. I'm sorry, I'm all talk on the crocodile front.
So I have yet to find one here in Toronto. A crocodile
or a great white.
Yeah. No, I know they're out there. But
that's so good. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
As to the crocodile hanging out and the great white just comes along.
Takes it.
Wow. It just goes to show you that if you think you're tough, there's always someone tougher out there.
Seriously.
Uh-huh. And then, you know what? There's an orca pod just waiting to kick the hell out of that great white shark for beating up on the crocodile.
Yeah, I saw footage of that one time I was watching Shark Week. And,
yep.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story. I love that story.
It's, pretty, it's kind of odd.
Screw crocodiles. I'm tired of their lip, man, all acting all, ooh, reptile-y. Yeah. No, go take a swim and see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a great white crocodile.
So there we go. So there's a shark story.
Love that.
But let's see. So that's the first story. Here's the second one. So we don't talk about politics a lot, and that's probably a good thing.
And do you know why?
I don't know why.
Because nobody wants to hear our political views.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so, but yeah, we're going to dabble in a little bit with a little bit outdoor industry news. So today got announced, today or yesterday. But anyways, it doesn't matter because this is now a couple of weeks ago by the time this interview actually gets put out. So Obama nominated Sally Jewell as the, hopefully the upcoming in charge of Park and Wildlife Service, Interior Secretary. And who is she, you ask?
I do ask, who is she?
Yeah, she's the currently the chief executive officer of REI, the big outdoor store in the U.S., like the chain of stores.
Yeah, REI. I've got three of them near my house here.
Really? And we don't have any interior, so I've only been to one.
No, because you have MEC. You don't need REI.
Yeah. We're all about initials in the outdoor industry.
So. It's true.
So it's kind of an interesting piece. So the outdoor people are pretty excited about it. So that job's a pretty pretentious job. So it's like you're in charge of like the parks and you're in charge of fish and wildlife and all that stuff that people like to go do. But you're also in charge of mining and surface mining and Bureau of Land Management, which tends to make things dirty. So you kind of got to play this job between what environmentalists want and what lobbyists want. And it's a tough one. So over the past several years, the outgoing guy right now, he's kind of been middle of the road. And even before that, under the Bush time, it was much more corporate type focus people had been in. So anyways, now people don't really know what's going to happen, but everybody seems to be happy about it. Well, except for everybody who's not happy. So.
Well, that is very middle of the road. Everyone's happy unless you're not happy, in which case you're probably not going to be terribly happy about it.
Well, part of it was people were saying, because she's got a very strong environmental ethic and she was the CEO of an outdoor store. But at the same time, when she was really young, she worked for, what is she? She was a petroleum engineer with Mobile before it was Exxon. So she knows about some of the issues on both sides of the fence quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So have to see how it plays out. But though I will say, I was reading a piece researching a bit about this. It caught kind of everybody by surprise. And the people who were definitely caught by surprise was the petroleum lobbyist industry. They don't have a clue who she is.
Well, that's kind of good.
So yeah, so the confirmation for this, if it goes through smooth, will probably be over the next couple weeks. So we'll play it out and see what happens.
Any more, speaking of playing it out, any more news on the dude who got shot in the butt?
Mm.
I rest my case. We're going to visit this one more time.
I don't know.
Of course.
I know nothing.
On to the next story.
So there we go. All right. We'll end it with our feel-good story here. So let's see here. So let's travel with me. We're out of Washington, and we're going to go to the state of Washington, Clark County, Washington in particular.
Clark County.
So this just happened just a couple days ago.
Yeah, a few seconds.
Sorry?
Scant few seconds ago.
It's just breaking news.
Right.
Three boys were kayaking down the Salmon River today. Yeah, 16, 10, 8. So they're paddling down. The story seems to put them all in one boat, but I imagine that happens. So they flip, and everyone's panicking, mainly the three boys. And who sees them? Who saves them? Try to take a guess.
Oh, I was horrible at the last one, but I'm going to try this. A Yogi Bear impersonator.
How'd you know?
Wow.
No.
First, okay. Okay, let me think. No. Gabriel the Archangel coming down to destroy the world with his flaming sword, just like the Jehovah's Witnesses believe.
That's exactly what happened.
Would
you believe?
I would. I would believe anything you tell me.
The only people who saw them and heard them were some prisoners. And one of the guys jumps in the water. They were on a work detail. There we go.
Right. Chain gang. Yeah.
And one guy dives in the water.
with the chainsaw.
See them coming. Well, I don't think
he's taking everybody else with him if he dies in the water with a chain on.
I don't think he had like a ball and chain on him.
I want to believe that he had a chain. I want to break to the bottom. Cool hand Luke jumping in the water to save the boys, boss.
Yeah. So he sees them coming down the river. So he dives in, kind of catches them as they go by and herds them onto this island where, and then two other guys come down and help get everybody off this island in the middle of this small river.
These convicts are working on the chain gang, probably singing spirituals.
Probably.
I'm only guessing.
With a pickaxe.
And that's right.
Yeah.
Bring me a little water, Sylvie. Bring me a little water. They're working. All of a sudden they hear, you know, la, 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 la. Look. Oh, and they flip over. The kids flip over and they're swimming. And one of them says sort of like, you know, Shawshank Redemption style. No, not Shawshank Redemption. What was the one with the glowy?
Green Mile.
Green Mile style. So I got to save these boys.
Nope. And I got to save these boys.
That was a really good impression.
Thank you.
Nice. Was that the Jolly Green Giant?
Yeah, yeah.
The ho, ho, ho. So dude says, I got to jump in and save these boys. Yeah. Now, first of all, he's on a chain gang. He's on a work detail, right?
Yeah.
And I got to believe there were dudes with guns in.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Right. So all of a sudden he yells, there are three boys drowning. I'm going to jump in. How did he not get killed immediately?
Well, yeah, because you run, and it must have been on a real minimum security one.
Right.
You know, so it's
work release.
Yeah, that would be the thing. So it's a funny piece. So they, you know, haul the kids out, and they send them off to the hospital for mild hypothermia, but everybody was okay.
Sure.
The prison's all excited about it, you know. Got some news or
right.
something.
Finally some good PR.
Yeah, exactly.
Ray Ray shivved Gene in the shower last week, and now we finally have some dudes saving kids. That's
well, there's
because you don't get a lot of good PR out of a prison. It's not where you expect to see that.
Exactly, you know. Kitten saved. Yeah.
Right.
There's a quote at the end of the article that says they were trying to find the three men, they're going to get a letter of praise from the assistant secretary of prisons. Someone's accepted that.
If I got that letter, I would just wipe my butt with it. What I want to be is out.
We can't get you out, but we're going to give you this letter. And so the piece at the end was like, they were looking for a way to honor the inmates. And then the quotes here is, the boy's father wanted to do something for the guys up there. And there's been talk about doing a follow-up with the kids coming to be reunited with the prisoners.
But bad idea.
But prison spokesperson Heather Sims said, we definitely want to do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be like one of those Scared Straight episodes.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of friggin' father? Okay, I don't know this guy. You know, I'm a father myself. You're a father.
Yeah.
We get this. But what kind of father says, all right, boys, go ahead and canoe by yourself, by the prison gang. Just go ahead. Go ahead.
That's the first thing, because that's the thing. It's like ages 16, 10, and 8. So we have an 8-year-old, and they're shoving them all in one boat to start with. So that's a bit of a window into it.
My 8-year-old son can barely remember to brush his hair in the morning, let alone stay away from a dude named Big Earl who dives in the water. So
I'll get those kids.
Exactly. So this father lets his kids canoe down prisoner-infested waters. And
without getting over dramatic or anything.
Exactly. No. And then his big plan, you know what? I want to take him to prison to see the guys who saved him. No, you don't. What you want to do is you want to tell your kids to stay in school and maybe learn how to canoe a little bit better. Don't bother the guys who are doing time for killing somebody.
It's it's quite the story. Yeah,
it is quite the story.
Yeah, that's I'm going to end it on that touching story.
You know what? In all honesty, though, those guys were pretty cool to jump in and say. I like to believe that, and this is me being serious, I like to believe that not all criminals are out there being criminally all the time. You know, some people make mistakes, and I get that. It was pretty cool for somebody, especially, you know, I've been in prison. I haven't been in prison, but I've been to prisons. And there is a lot of looking out for yourself kind of attitude, because you kind of have to.
Yeah.
You know, you got a bunch of alpha males and criminals stuck in one spot, and it gets real dangerous and real, you know.
Well, it's also the side of it is like what you mentioned, the fact that, I mean, generally running away from the work details looked on as a bad thing. So, I mean, that's a pretty high risk depending on where he was. I mean,
now, being a father, I wouldn't let my kids go into prison to visit.
Though I would say I would be interested in taking the tour.
Well, of course you would. But I would definitely shake those guys' hands and say thank you.
Yeah. So there we go. It's three little news stories for our midwinter February.
It is February. And you know what? The cool thing about February, I like the fact that we have not one but two interviews this week. The second interview is my friend, your friend, Ryan Rushton from Geneva Kayak. And we're going to listen to him talk just about now.
You can follow us on Twitter at Kayak Mainline. Or if you're old school and like to email, that's kayakmainline@gmail.com. kayakmainline@gmail.com or Twitter feed Kayak Mainline.
Folks, this is Kayak Mainline, our interview for episode number, what number is it, David?
Number 10.
Number 10, and we have with us the venerable and talented Ryan Rushton. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
I think that's to you, David.
Oh, yeah, we're doing fantastic.
Good. Are we? Yes, we're doing wonderful. I can only speak for myself. You can only speak. Well, you're in Toronto.
I know.
That's how it is. Is it wonderful in Toronto? I think that's what he's really asking.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Good. Cool. So for those of you who don't know, Ryan Rushton is the owner of Specialty Expeditions. Is that what we were calling
that's
it?
That's our behind the veil, huge corporate name.
The very large corporation of America was already taken. So you went with Specialty Expeditions.
Yes. So most people know us as the Geneva Kayak Center.
No, not the Geneva Kayak. Really? Yes. Ryan has been running the business Geneva Kayak Center for quite some time. For how long now?
2005. So it's, we're going on 8 years. It's crazy.
And you are in the greater Chicagoland area, but specifically outside of Chicago.
We are. We are not in Geneva, Switzerland, which we get some webmail inquiries, looking for us to run programs there.
You know, you should, though. I don't know why you wouldn't. Just like give them a really high number to run programs out there and just show up.
That's right. That's right.
I thought that you were, trying to be all European.
Yes. We're very sophisticated. So.
They're uppity folk over there. But I've been to your shop on many occasions. I've known you for many, many years now, Ryan. And the one thing that Ryan is here to talk to us about, and one thing that I wanted to speak with him about, first and foremost, is that you do quite a few trips. So you lead trips not only in the Chicagoland area, but you also lead them all over the United States. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. Yep. It just kind of sprung out of my background as far as coming from a guiding background.
Yeah. So speak to us about that. Tell us all about, because some people aren't going to know Ryan. And by the way, folks, if you don't know Ryan, go ahead, go out into the garage, grab a ball peen hammer and hit yourself square in the forehead, because you should know who Ryan Rushton is right now. But for those of you who don't, give us the lowdown. How'd you get started in this whole wacky kayaking business?
I started as a canoe guide. And somebody gave me a plastic sit-on-top. It was, I think it was a Perception sort of whitewater sit-on-top kayak.
Nice.
And I started paddling on the Wolf River.
In Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yes, it's a nice Northwoods run. And somewhere along the line, somebody said, well, you should get into one of these boats, which looked much cooler than mine. So I decided to try whitewater kayaking.
There's nothing cooler than a sit-on-top Perception.
Right?
So whoever you're talking to had their facts wrong.
Except for maybe two sit-on-top Perception kayaks. Those are always better. So then you get into whitewater. You're hitting the whitewater pretty well.
Yeah, hitting the whitewater.
But then you realize, like the rest of us, that there's no money in whitewater.
And you say that like there's money in sea kayaking.
So. Well, maybe there's $15 more in sea kayaking, but still.
No, but so started in whitewater. Being a guide, there wasn't much, as you say, money in whitewater. So I decided to try this sea kayaking thing as a guide and didn't really like it at first. I thought it was really quite boring, but then got a little bit of an introduction to the Atlantic Ocean and decided it wasn't boring.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now, and I think this is fascinating because Ryan and I have very similar backgrounds in that regard. Both of us thought, and I think I'm speaking for you on this one, Ryan, both of us thought that sea kayaking was for old people and basically a nosebleed, and you kind of had to do it because, you know, someone was going to pay you to teach them how to kayak. Whitewater was where it was at, until we got down into the Atlantic Ocean and got our butts whooped a little bit, then realized how much fun sea kayaking can be.
That's really it's very accurate. I walked in, I had basically never been in a sea kayak before, and you know, walked out or decided to sign up for an instructor certification course.
Sure.
And thought I was just going to it was going to be a cakewalk. So I basically went out to Virginia Beach full of confidence and came back and realized, one, I didn't know what I was doing, and two, that there was this really cool sport of sea kayaking.
Yeah, yeah. And so now you have been, obviously you paddled on the West Coast, on the East Coast, but you also got to go out to Wales quite a bit.
Yeah, I've been four times to Anglesey. Okay. And yeah, really enjoy paddling there, of course.
Sure.
Were you guiding or just on your own?
The first two times that I went over were for Nigel's dealer's meet.
Nigel Dennis Kayaks, for Nigel Dennis of Nigel Dennis Kayaks.
Oh, yes. Okay. The dealer's meet's a wonderful thing that Nigel does. He doesn't fly you over, but once you're over, he pretty much takes care of everyone. You know, he puts you up, he feeds you, you go to a few meetings, and then you do a lot of paddling and socializing. So,
right. as it's been said before, you went over to Wales and you stayed for many days drinking in a pub and kayaked a bit.
We did. Kayaked a bit. Yes.
So you've been there, you've been all over the place, and now taking all that experience of these many years, you are now guiding trips all over the country, and that's really what we wanted to talk to you about. So you do some cool trips. I know every year, at least once a year, you go to Tybee Island. And that's, I think, is one of your children.
That is one of my children. That's Foster.
What up, Foster?
Yeah, right. Hey. And here's my daughter Mari.
Hi, Mari.
Station.
Hi, Mari.
Kelly, you've met Mari.
I've met all of your children, yes.
Very good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And is your wife Chastity there?
Melody is here.
Excellent. No,
Harmony, if she was in the room, would be throwing daggers at me with her eyes right now.
Of course. I might.
How lucky do.
Yes.
Good Molly.
Uh-huh.
You're
You are the first child we've ever had. Well, first official child we've ever had on Kayak Mainline, kiddo.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to talk to your dad for a bit more, okay? Is that all right with you?
Okay, guys. I'll be upstairs in just a little bit, okay?
Okay. Dad, Mom said we could wrestle.
Okay.
Okay, we'll I'm going to bike race.
Yay!
Yay! All right, I'm going to wrestle your dad too later on. Nice. And now, and here's the big thing. So you've also been going to Alaska. You've had a couple of trips to Alaska, but from what I understand, and I think this is pretty cool, you're actually doing a 16-day trip in Alaska from Homeward to Seward. I'm not going to say that right. Seward.
Yep.
Seward. See, I told you, David, you jackass. Seward. So tell us about, and this is something, and this is cool, folks. If you ever want, we actually had a question on Kayak Mainline, which you were very nice to answer about paddling the coast of Alaska and how some folks wanted to know what they could do to get started. Well, you are actually opening this up to the public, and you're going to be taking folks on how many miles? Give me the lowdown here, brother.
Yeah, depending on how much we sort of poke around in the fjords and, you know, some of the cool places to explore, it could be anywhere, you know, about 230 to 250 nautical miles that we're going to cover. Yeah.
So that's like 4 days, right?
4 days, yeah.
4 days. So you,
at the rate David paddles, it was
sure.
I've just paddled with him for the first time in Wawa. So yeah, 4 days.
Excellent. No, for realsies though, you're looking at 2 weeks. of time that you're going to plan out? Or is it, what, 16 days? How many days do you think you're going to be on the water, and how many weather days? How do you go about planning something like this?
Yeah, we're going to be on the water for 15 days. Okay. And we thought that that would give us a good amount of leeway because it's really unpredictable. There's a lot of stretches that will be no landing zones and what I call crux points, you know, points that, you know, you sort of plan, you know, your 4 or 5 days around just paddling around this one headland or point. And so, you know, we could paddle for, you know, have 3 30-mile days in a row just so that we can have a really short day around somewhere like Gore Point, you know, or an easy day just to give us that margin of error. Because when you're on a coast like this that's fully exposed to, you know, the Gulf of Alaska, i.e. Pacific Ocean, you know, you don't know what sort of swell, you know, sitting here 6 months out from the expedition, we don't know what sort of conditions that will be present when we're out there. We just know that we expect conditions.
Right, right. And so what's the longest crossing, or what kind of crossings are you going to have, exposed crossings? You know, what, tell us some bits and bobs about, you know, what people might see there.
We're going to mostly, you know, keep land on our right.
Good.
And, yeah, we're mostly keep land on our right. There's not really any large crossings that would be the challenge. If that was the case, it would be optional. We'd go out to the Chiswell Islands. But the biggest challenges here are if you've paddled up there, you would know what a no landing zone is. You know,
okay.
We have, you know, cliffs that, you know, rise up and, you know, for 2000 feet, you know, from sea level. And so going around these major headlands, Point Ialik, Gore Point, which I've mentioned before, these are, you know, 15 or 16 mile paddles, where you're fully exposed and, you know, to any incoming swell or wind, you know, where there's just nowhere to land. And so we have to make sure that, you know, before we commit to doing that stretch of the journey, that everything looks really great. And so that really the committed paddling around, you know, headlands where three of us know, that's where it gets messy.
Yes. Gets a little dicey out there.
Yes, it can.
So, but this is a trip that's really your participants on this trip. They're going to learn the hard way that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. With the planning stages, this is not any sort of faint of heart kind of trip. This is the real deal. But it sounds like, you know, sort of the deal of a lifetime, really. I mean, wouldn't you agree, David?
Oh man, I'm staring at it on Google Maps right now.
you seemed awful quiet over there.
Oh yeah, man, those fjords look phenomenal.
That sounds great. So how many people do you expect to take on this trip? And how many guys are you going to have?
There's going to be between 4 to 6 paddlers and then Phil and myself.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Good deal. And when is this, you know, not to sound like a cheap plug, but what the hell? Why not sound like a cheap plug? When are you going to run this trip?
The date we're going to start the trip is July 5th.
Okay.
And we've kind of given ourselves to the 20th as far as a window, you know, the maximum amount of time that we would be out there.
Right on.
You know, and you know, to be honest, it's we're shooting for a pretty small target with the folks that would join us on this, you know, on this trip. You know, certainly folks that, you know, have some higher level, you know, paddling awards or instructor certifications, or forget all the paper and are just really good paddlers.
Cool.
And so, you know, having that level of paddlers, but also people that, you know, look at, you know, what we're doing and, you know, the benefits of being out there for that much time with a group of peers. And really a couple of, you know, quote unquote guides, we look at it more as consultants or coaches that, we're not going to hold your hand. This is all about, being a member of the expedition team. And really, Phil and I are, we're sounding boards, because, the decisions that are going to be made out there, are going to be made by the people on the trip. And they're not going to be made, solely by Phil or I.
That's pretty cool. Oh. Well, so, people want to get in touch with you, Ryan Rushton. How do they go about doing that?
You can contact us through email at info@genevakayak.com. Or you could just go to genevakayak.com and go to the contact us link and send us a website inquiry.
Cool. And folks, if you want to get in touch with Ryan, by all means, give us an email here at kayakmainline@gmail. You know how that is done. And we can get in touch with you too. I'm sure he would take an email once in a while from me if I sent it now and again.
Dave, mine just goes straight into spam.
That's true. Well, they go straight in my spam box as well. Dave, you got any more questions? I've been sort of monopolizing all this, but you've been doing a lot of the interviews lately. So
what happens around boats? Are people bringing boats? How does that work? It's certainly two pretty remote areas. Are there boats
there?
Yeah.
We have had the great fortune of working with Tom Pogson of the Alaska Kayak School.
Hey, Tom. What's up, Tom? I know Tom from way back.
Tom provides a super valuable service. I know that there's several companies, similar to ours, Sea Kayak Cornwall, Terra Santa Expeditions out of Israel, that go back every year and work with Tom. And he provides more than boats. He provides support. He provides someone to say, you're crazy, don't do this. Sure.
It's worth it for sure.
We call Tom in the field with the sat phones, and he gives us weather reports, because you're not getting a NOAA forecast out there, my friend.
So he'll shuttle in the boats for you guys.
Yeah, he's been he is a Sea Kayaking UK Expedition Center, and he has Sea Kayaking UK boats, of course, and Warner paddles, and some Valley boats as well.
Kokatat dry suits, cheap plug.
Yep,
he's got some Kokatat dry suits.
So you're not going to end up as sit on top reception boats.
No,
that's a true tragedy.
No. That would be a true tragedy. Yes.
You could join the Tsunami Rangers.
Pink red suits.
See what I did there? See, I just took a shot at somebody, and I didn't need to do that.
This was so positive until
exactly. This was an uplifting moment, and then I just had to take it into the poop hole. It was terrible. Well, Ryan, thank you very much for joining us tonight on this episode of Kayak Mainline. And folks, if you want to get with Ryan, by all means, hit him again with the email address, Ryan.
It is info@genevakayak.com.
Cool. And again, thanks for being here. And I hope your trips go, specifically this one, but all your trips this year go really well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, thank you.
So how bad do you want to go to Alaska now?
Oh, man, that whole interview, I just was staring at Google Maps.
Of course you were.
That's where I want to go.
I can't imagine paddling like the entire coast of the largest state in the Union.
Yeah.
I know it's not the entire coast, but I mean, it's like 900 times larger than any other state.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, that whole area where they're going in, there are bigger hills than in Michigan.
Oh, yeah. A little bit. Yeah. By a few feet. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that sounds like a trip of a lifetime. So, folks, if you really want to go and see the Alaska coastline, this is probably the trip to do it. I mean, there's there's no better chance to go with some good coaches and some good guides that will, help you through the experience. It's going to be fantastic. Cool. You got anything else for this week's episode number 10?
I got nothing.
Really? Nothing?
Well, I'm getting ready for Canucopia, so all my energy and all my focus is in that.
You say that so dramatically. Your acting ability has gone up since episode one, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fantastic deal. Well, cool. I got nothing either, David. But I will throw this out to the listening audience. If I bought a dog, what kind of dog would I buy?
I don't know. Are you looking for a big one or a small one?
No, I'm really not actually looking for a puppy.
Okay.
I just wanted to ask that question. All right, folks, so this has been episode 10 of the Kayak Mainline. Gosh, we hope you enjoyed listening as half as much as we enjoyed recording it. For myself, I am Kelly Blades.
And I'm David Johnston.
All right, let's kill this pig. That sounded horrible. Right. Sounds just terrible, killing a pig.
You've been listening to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please tell a friend or tell five. This shouldn't be a secret just for us. That thing you did with the German Shepherd, the surgical tubing, and the Bananas Foster, that's probably a secret you want to keep to yourself. But the podcast, let's tell everyone. Thanks for listening. The Sea of Heartbreak.